episode 366.
And my second biggest takeaway was it was pretty incredible on how these artificial intelligence or AI equipped, they learn themselves. Initially, they're like a person. You know, they initially have to be taught, but once they have the basics, they have learned behavior on what to do and recognizing shapes and sizes and what's a person and what's a dog and what's a sign. And it's amazing how incredibly fast this technology is moving.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to Remarkable Results Radio. Listen to learn just one thing from today's episode on your journey to remarkable results. Hi, Carm Capriato here, and welcome to Remarkable Results Radio with our ASCCA Connected Cars panel with Carolyn Cocolette, Dave Kusa, and Nico Sugias. You'll get a synopsis of the Connected Cars presentations that were held during the ASCCA team weekend in early September 2018. I want to give a big high-five salute to Federal Mogul Motor Parts for supporting the industry's premier podcast. When you need to search for parts, get the latest technical updates, or sign up for the Garage Rewards and Tech Loyalty Program to earn swag, go to fmmotorparts.com. And thanks, Federal Mogul Motor Parts, for bringing the podcast to the industry. Have you picked up a book lately and learned something new? Well, next to the Aftermarket's premier podcast, reading is one of your best intakes on building a better business and improving you as a leader. So many of my guests love to mention books that have really helped them. So I created a books page on the Remarkable Results website. Give it a visit and start adding to your collection. Are you in touch with our Remarkable community? Well, get inside our ecosystem at remarkableresults.biz/social. Here's a shout-out to new Facebook friends Robert Williams, Mark Mirages, and Amanda Fink, and LinkedIn connections Taylor Gleason and Christian Porter. The Automotive Service Councils of California, or ASCCA, Connected Cars panel discusses the importance of staying connected, no pun intended, to the ever-changing vehicle technology, our government, industry collaborators, and trainers, and that we have a huge opportunity if we embrace the evolving advanced driver assistance systems. The current outlook on connected car trends is addressed in this podcast in a discussion about Uber accidents, NASDAQ work on locksmith access, and more. The panel also reiterates the value ASCCA brings to their members by paying attention to our expeditious vehicle technology. With me is ASCCA board member Carolyn Cocolette of Luscious Garage, San Francisco, California, ASCCA past president Dave Kusa of Autotrend Diagnostics in San Francisco, California, and Nico Sugias of Charlie's Foreign Car Service in Encinitas, California. This episode grants us the wisdom to either adapt or become obsolete. Continuous learning and being prepared for autonomous cars is critical for you to stay ahead of the curve. Find the panel's talking points and special links to their previous episodes at remarkableresults.biz/E366. Hey, share this episode with a friend and learn to add podcasts to your weekly learning regime, because we must be forever students. So honored to have you here. Now enjoy this episode on The Connected Car. Hey, a warm welcome to the ASCCA Connected Cars team. Did you know that's your name?
It is, yes. Now.
I've just given you a new name. Hey, glad you're here. I remember doing a Facebook Live with you guys a few weeks ago as we were talking about the great ASCCA team weekend. And you came on and you gave us an idea of what the anticipation of the team weekend was about and what you were going to talk about regarding connected cars. Now it's after. We talked about defending our marketplace and keeping up with connected cars, and you had a great panel. Great panel. I want to tell you who's here. Carolyn Cocolette from Luscious Garage in San Fran.
Great to be with you again, Carm.
Oh, thanks, Carolyn. She's member of the board of directors and chair of the Connected Cars Committee. Oh, I see. That's why you're here. Dave Kusa, Autotrend Diagnostics, San Fran, California, also a past president of ASCCA. Hey, Dave.
How you doing, Carm?
Nico Sugias from Charlie's Foreign Car Service in Encinitas, California. Okay. Craig Johnson was there, Neil Hoffman, Rob Morrill, Carolyn, you were there, and you had who was your keynoter?
Fred Gruner was our keynote speaker. He is one of the principal engineers at NVIDIA, which turns out to be the company that pretty much makes all the technology for ADAS and self-driving for every auto manufacturer. So they're like the Intel inside. He is an extremely interesting person. Does a fantastic job. This is his second team weekend presenting for us. And we had the good pleasure of having Scott Brown from Diag.net also in attendance. And he was in the front row, just his mouth agape, just feeding all this amazing information from Fred. So we got the Scott Brown seal of approval on the tech side too. So that was great.
That's really important. So Carolyn, you walked up to Scott and you looked over his shoulder and you looked at his notes. What did you see?
He took a lot of actual specific notes on all the stuff that's happening, and then a bunch of photos of the slides and stuff. And I think he's got a thread going on Diag.net for that right now. So if folks are interested in some of the details, if you want to see what Scott Brown wrote down, I suggest going to Diag.net and checking it out.
I would love to hear a couple of things that your takeaway, Dave, Carolyn, Nico.
My biggest takeaway, which I thought was very interesting, is Fred said that any decision you can make in less than a second, a machine or a robot can do. So when you think about driving and what we do, how we drive our cars, pretty much everything we do is a second-to-second decision-making process. So we have machines and robots that can do that. So that's kind of the threshold with this AI or the artificial intelligence that's being developed. And my second biggest takeaway was it was pretty incredible on how these artificial intelligence or AI-equipped cars and going forward other aspects of our society, they learn themselves. They're like a person. You know, they initially have to be taught, but once they have the basics, they can learn. They have learned behavior on what to do and recognizing shapes and sizes and what's a person and what's a dog and what's a sign. And it's amazing how incredibly fast this technology is moving.
You know, I don't doubt that we're going to move, and maybe you heard this at the meeting, we're going to move in light speeds. I mean, you know, maybe in the next year, we may do more in tech improvements than we had in the last five, because we're learning, and we're fixing some of the problems, and we're writing better code, and there's faster processors. I think autonomy level 5, in my opinion, I think it's going to be good and safe. What's the word about trusting it from the consumer's perspective? Everyone's marching forward, but are the consumers marching with?
So one of the things Fred talked about too was that while we have essentially the technology in place to do the thing, you know, we have the technology, we can build him, you know, what we still have to figure out is how to operate these vehicles safely. In other words, the devil's in the details. And the time frame that he set out was that, you know, this technology is being adopted and it's underway. But the time frame for us in the aftermarket to really be prepared is 15 years from now. So it's not nearly as kind of breakneck and scary as we sometimes hear. And then there have also been some changes recently, like a cooling off period, if you will, as a result of the accident that was in Arizona previously this year. And people are just starting to get past the novelty point and, like I said, get into the details. So yeah, I agree. I think we're going to get there eventually, but there's still quite a bit of work to do.
In the beginning, when they talked about the self-driving car, was it acceptable to be equal on have the same amount of fatalities as a human driver? Or is the public going to accept a much lesser fatality rate? So that, you know, the public, if the public sees one fatality rate, that's one too many. But really they're judging it by, you know, how many millions of miles per fatality rate. So right now I think there's really too little data to know exactly what an autonomous car can do per millions of miles per fatality. That is yet to be decided by the public. I think the public will make that decision.
You mean there's a zero tolerance?
I think so.
So the term that Fred proposed, which I thought was actually a fascinating idea, was this idea of functional safety. And I think that's actually totally applicable to what we do in our daily lives fixing cars, right? What's our functional safety of what we as humans provide to auto repair. Of course, people make mistakes and so on and so forth. But what is functionally safe, and what they define as functionally safe, is a situation with the absence of unacceptable risk. So, you know, determine what is unacceptable risk and then create an environment that is without that. Which, to say it another way, is we will accept acceptable risk. And that's, I think, what we have yet to get a fine point on it. What exactly does the public accept as risk in these cases?
I love it. Functional safety. There was a GM exec that said one day, even though we may have full level 5, most of the owners will want to be participants in that level 5. And I'm not sure if I recall where he said there will be a switch that says, please let me be part of this thing, but react faster than I may want to. Is that what functional safety is? I'm involved?
Well, I think it's a higher level concept in terms of just, you know, when do we say that, you know, the bird can leave the nest? You know, there's a lot of discussion about that, which is in the presence of and we're casting, you know, we're looking in our crystal ball, right? What are people going to want 10, 15, 20 years from now?
I love it. You know, these podcasts live, on demand on the internet. And in 15 years, Carolyn, we should look back at what we just talked about.
We're going to open up the bottle on the
yeah.
beach.
Right.
Yeah, we're going to look at it. We're going to go out and say, come here. Hey, Carolyn, bring your wheelchair over here. Come here. Yeah. Come here, Carm, you're on your crutches. And we're all huddling over. You remember 15 years ago, we thought we knew what we were talking about?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I describe it as one possible future, right, on what may be coming down the line. Another issue or takeaway for me was the anticipation of the fear of this in our shops of, you know, how are we ever going to be able to fix these cars, you know, all this technology, all these components. And I've had this conversation a couple of times in the recent past, and I used the example. The question I asked was, what do these things all have in common? Disc brakes, electronic ignition, electronic fuel injection, onboard computers, networked cars, with onboard networks. What do they all have in common, right? And these were all things that were going to make it impossible for us to fix cars in the aftermarket. So I think that this is another one of those boogeymen on the horizon that those of us that aren't looking at this as an opportunity, but looking at it with fear and not being prepared, are going to be worried about, we're not going to be able to fix these cars. And I think that we will. I know that we will, because of, you know, specifically what this committee is doing, as well as many other organizations across the country, in preparing us for this so that we're ahead of this curve. So that, you know, what I told the question answer or questioner was, when this car shows up at your shop, you can say, yes, I can fix that. And that's our goal, is to be able to have our industry ready for that.
Well said, and thank you for saying that. We say that a lot here on the podcast. I'm talking with Jonathan Cicchelli, a technical product specialist with Federal Mogul Motor Parts. So, Jonathan, how does a service professional get the guru on the go van to their shop?
There's a couple ways. We do what we call cold calls, where we go around and just visit shops based on geographics. And there's also times where we team up with outside sales reps from other parts distributors and visit the shops on that basis.
So I love this. You pull into a shop on a cold call, they see the van, and they're probably excited to see you.
Yeah. I've had a couple shops where they've actually have already heard of the gurus via Facebook or social media. So when I show up, they've already been signed up and taken online classes, and now that the van's there, it's really easy to book a lunch and learn.
So you're really an extension of the Garage Guru training centers.
Yes, absolutely.
So you're all done with your lunch and learn. You spend 45 minutes to an hour. Probably that's all you can really get from a busy, busy shop. What are the technicians saying about your shop visit?
Oh, they love it. They thank me, you know, every second I'm walking out the door, and just can't wait for me to come back again.
Federal Mogul Motor Parts' Garage Gurus is your go-to source for the vehicle training, technology, and answers you need to keep your next job on track. On site, online, or on demand, the gurus are here to help keep your business and your career on the road to success. Visit fmgarageguru.com. And I know you also had some ADAS training. And the thing that I find about ADAS today and what you just said, Dave, is the future is here and it's now. You know, we've got to learn how to fix blind spot mirrors, you know, and get all the calibration stuff right. You know, who's going to do it? Can you walk us through what your takeaways were on the ADAS demo?
So, for example, Dave just reminded me, how about window replacement? What happens when you get your front window replaced and the front camera that's right mounted near the rearview mirror needs to be recalibrated? We had Mitchell there. They didn't have the tool there, but they were demonstrating how to use the Bosch system to measure the front wheels, the rear wheels. You do it with lasers. You mark it on the ground, 18.123 inches. I mean, it's like really exact, precise stuff. Move this thing 1.89 millimeters after you've looked. Is really, really precision stuff. They're recommending to do that anytime the car has a front windshield replaced. We didn't really talk too much about alignments. I don't remember if when you got an alignment, that front camera also had to be replaced or not, or recalibrated. But that was very interesting to get that, the take from Mitchell. And that's what Mitchell is going to be recommending in their body shops. And it was, he gave a number. It was like the average price at a dealer was $500 or $600 to have the front camera re-aimed. That's a lot of time. And judging by the setup of the tool, it looks like there's a lot of time involved.
I saw that in Detroit. It was raining. We were under a tent. Of course, nothing was perfect, and we weren't on flat ground. The light wasn't right, and we were finding out, oh, it has to be flat. The light has to be right. There has to be, and everybody, and this was, what, a year and a half ago, and everybody's going out, you know, that Jack Benny look? Well, what's going on here? And how much is it? We don't even know yet. We haven't priced the equipment. And it was just so incredibly high tech. And one of our discussion points was, will we start building in our communities? Nico, for example, you have space in your building and you may want to set up an ADAS calibration unit. And, you know, friends bring their customers cars for these reasons. Do you see that?
Yeah, I was actually thinking about that during the presentation. I was like, where could I put this thing in my shop? I guess, you know, I could roll it out. You need 18 feet. I think it was 18 total feet or 18 feet in front of the bumper. It was a large, flat space on the same plane as the equipment's going to be on. Another thing to talk about, too, was the post-test drive, the check. And you just reminded me with the rain in the north where it's snowing, it can't be snowing during the self-check. So then they're like, you know, you have to turn it off. You have to disable the system. If it's snowing, you know, what if you're in, you know, Minnesota and there's snow piled high on the ground and you can't do the final self-test? Pretty interesting stuff. I'm sure this is all going to rapidly change. Like, you can't turn the ADAS off because it's snowing for 5 months, right? That's not acceptable. So that's, you know, that's going to have to change. But right now, the word on the street is you can't do it if it's snowing. Okay. We're going to have to have dedicated 18 foot of space, flat ground. You can't have any pictures in the back. There can't be any lines or anything because it screws up the camera's target.
I want to remind our listeners, just go to my website, go to the search bar, find the search button. There's all kinds of search things all over the site. Type in ADAS and just listen to some of the discussion that we've had, very much in the line of what we're talking about here. And one of the questions that I had in some of these subsequent interviews was that I always believe that nature finds a way, capitalism finds a way, okay? And all I kept thinking was that the toleration of the OE dealer in setting up ADAS calibration units in their place, they're going to go to the OEs and say, you got to make this easier. Come on, knock, knock, knock. You've got, where's the self-calibration going to come from that's going to read out and tell you what's wrong instead of the measures and the targets? You know, am I crazy thinking that it should get easier?
Well, you're basically what we're in the same era of like the 1996 vehicle that could never run the evaporative system monitor. Like it never will. And the automakers had to solve for that in order to have successful, you know, emissions testing. And if they build systems that can't be calibrated, it's not the aftermarket's problem. In fact, it's not the dealership's problem either. It's the OE's problem. They have to provide systems that are serviceable in order for the cars to stay on the road, right? How it works coming off the line is irrelevant. It depends on how it works, you know, out on the road. And that includes service scenarios. So we're seeing them have to work through that. At the very least, it was rad to get a chance to see, you know, what the calibrations look like now and just demystify that. Because when we did look at the you know, he hooked up the scan tool and then presented the scan tool screen up on the presentation projector. And it was like, oh, this is just a utility. This is just, you know, a test or a calibration like I would do on anything, any of the cars I work on now. Yes, I have to set up the targets and so on and so forth. And there's things specific to the optics of the vehicle. But I mean, the process of using the scan tool and where to find the menu, and it's not in Greece, in Greek. It's like, it's makes perfect sense. It's like, oh, we're familiar with how to do this. And the minute that's demystified for us, it's like, okay, we'll figure this out.
I had a tech on a couple of weeks ago, Tech Talk 6, Bob Hype, and he was talking about, as a mobile tech, going into a collision shop and doing, I think, a Subaru. And he says, it took me a while to do my first one. I had to read all kinds of information in the manuals to really understand. And his first shot didn't work. He was off by a crazy inch or something on one of the measures. And, you know, his learning curve. But you know what? They're willing to jump in and give it a shot and learn. Like the people that did disc brakes, right? And electronic ignition and all those things you mentioned earlier, Dave. This is, how hard could this be? Come on, let me at it.
Ultimately, you're right. A car is a car. So, you know, we'll figure it out. The challenge, and I think you just mentioned something good there, Karma, is, you know, I think that ultimately in the few model years that they won't be self-calibrating, that we'll eventually have, you know, somebody that will be mobile, that will make the investment in the equipment and provide mobile services like the mobile airbag guy does for the body shops, or, you know, the mobile scan guy for doing recalibrations on, you know, you don't have every factory scan tool, that kind of thing. So I think the mobile industry or mobile aspect will pick that up. But I think the bigger challenge for us is, you know, we talked about a little bit at the event, is, you know, we're going to get a phone call of how much to replace my windshield. And we know that this car needs to be calibrated, and we're going to know that we need another $300 or $400, and we need to use good high quality glass or the factory glass. So, you know, it's going to be $1,000, let's say. And they say, oh my God, because I just got a quote for $250 from the guy down the street, right? So this will be another one of these at one consumer at a time education processes of why it's important to make sure it gets done correctly with the proper equipment, with the proper parts and glass, so that your car is safe and reliable, right? These systems need to work. It's, you know, a unique system in that if it doesn't work properly, if it fails, potential for disaster is huge.
We're all going to pay more insurance for glass coverage, aren't we?
No doubt.
Yeah. that just went up.
That just hurt really bad. And it was, hey, I bought a car with ADAS equipment, and they gave me a discount, and they raised my glass coverage.
And Carm, also, just real quick to mention, that same question was asked, and Fred answered it. Fred said, "There, if I heard him correctly, there will not be a self-calibrating camera. Maybe the calibration technique will become easier, but he's like, that calibration is critical to find the side of the line." He mentioned many times the edges of the road. That he said that 50 times in every single thing that he did. So it was like, when the car is driving, he's got to see edges of the road, all that, and that's.
I love
critical.
This, Nico. Okay, edges of the road. Dave, you gave me your takeaways. What else did Fred say that was cutting edge, repetitive, things I need to know?
The human brain compared to like the supercomputer the human brain can still out-computate it. And we're talking at numbers that I can't understand, like a trillion, 100,000, like a trillion thousand computations per second. And then all these supercomputers keep coming out at 200,000, which is like, you know, some number with a bunch of zeros at the end of it. But they are working on getting all that into a small enough box to put into a car. That's what they're striving for right now.
Anybody ever talk about that Nissan headpiece that they designed that was going to sense your brain waves? And, you know, if the car, if it sensed that you were going to put your foot on the brake, it would start braking 1 second before you decided to do it. Was there anybody talk about that? Did you guys see that article?
No, I haven't seen it.
I'm going to find it and try to put a link to it in the show notes page. It was fascinating to see that Nissan was working on this. I'm sure you weren't going to wear it when you were driving down the road to a wedding, but it was a headset hooked to a computer, and it was sensing, you know, it connected the drive and your actions to what you were doing and thinking. I wouldn't be surprised that someday that could be our ATIS assistant.
I don't know if I want someone with their
Brain waves.
Right, where they're staring at their phones, right? We don't need them to be driving the car. We want the car to be ignoring what the human might be doing.
So it's great that you brought this to your members on your team weekend. Did you shake up any of your members' thinking because of this, you know, half a day's session that you had?
Yeah, people were super engaged. It was great to test the, you know, kind of read the temperature from this event versus a year ago when Fred had presented previously. And I thought that, I'm interested, Dave and Nico, your thoughts, but I felt like people were a lot more grounded and a lot more reassured and were inspired. You know, they were like, great, let's go do it.
Yeah. I think that initial, oh my God, knee jerk is behind us. For those of us that have been paying attention to this. And now it's like, okay, yeah, this is starting to make sense. And I think also, you know, even a year ago, right, it was one of those, this was science fiction out on the horizon. And then, you know, then we see reports of the cars on the road. We see, you know, I mean, I'm in Google land here, right, in California. I saw it with my own two eyes, you know, the car had a driver but no steering wheel. So, you know, this stuff exists. It's real. It's not science fiction. And I think that's, you know, we're more at that level now in getting closer even every day as an industry to be ready.
That wasn't George Jetson, was it?
No, it wasn't flying. No, I'm waiting for my flying car. They still haven't got me a flying car.
I want one, too.
We want to fly over the traffic here in California.
Right?
That's what we want.
Can you imagine the congestion at 50 feet?
Right, in heaven. Well, in a third dimension, right? We're having trouble with front and back, left and right. Imagine up and down.
You're right. Well, I never thought this conversation would go to the air, but very good. Nico, your thoughts on the members' reactions?
The members' reactions were positive. I think with showing them especially a way to fix the car, a way to, you know, adjust the camera and all that, that was certainly reassuring. Like, hey, we can adjust the camera. We can set all this stuff up. And once you provide setting everything up and, you know, showing, hey, you're going to go drive it afterwards, the car is going to learn this and learn that, I think that's part of the reassurance, just the training on doing it.
We did have some great takeaways when Craig Johnson and Rob Morrell talked about SAE and NASDAQ, that I think it was reassuring to a lot of people, the level of commitment that so many ASCCA members, but these two guys specifically, especially Craig, I mean, he sits on, you know, he's on NASDAQ's board of directors and sits on, so therefore every committee, really helped, again, add some clarity and demystified some of these things that are going on out there. And again, I think people were like, wow, this is great that we are so involved and we're right on the edge of this information. So we're a little more comfortable knowing that the future is safe.
Can you think of just one item that was really powerful that came from Craig?
For me, it's been an ongoing conversation again, too, but the need and necessity to have what, you know, the locksmith's ID, LS ID, which is changing to the vehicle VSC, vehicle security.
Secure data release model.
Yeah. Yeah. The SDRM. Yeah. But it's VSC is the vehicle security credential. That's it.
Yeah.
Plus ID is now VSC. Again, it's one of those things that we looked at. Oh, I don't work on Mercedes. I don't need that. Right. Cause we hear the conversation surrounding theft parts and security parts on these high-end cars. It's like, well, you do need it, right? I mean, I ran into it. I needed it to get a part for a Dodge truck the other day. So it's going to be more and more so as the autonomous cars, the security of the car is going to be huge. And we're going to need to be vetted before we are allowed to conversate with this car with our scan tools. And be able to tell the car what we need and what it wants to do. And we don't have these credentials, we're not going to get in. So, you know, it's do it now, right? Be prepared. Have that set up and ready to go. And when that car shows up, you don't have to say, oh, you have to go to the dealer. You can say, no, I can fix it. I can handle this. We're ready.
Nico, any big takeaway from Rob Morrell?
I was going to say, Rob had the same thing. I think with both of them, Craig and Rob on NASTIF, just knowing that we can work through the LSID, if it's going to, you know, impede our access to OBD2, they're going to make sure that it doesn't. Craig gave some pretty good examples of, you know, if he wasn't on the board, he wasn't going to be able to have live data on a GM while driving. They want to shut the CAN line off to get ABS live data. And he's like, no, don't do that because we need the live data for that from the ABS module while we're driving, because I want to see the wheel speed to see what it's doing. And he said all the everybody else there didn't really know to even say that because they're all engineers and they don't fix cars. So it's really good that we have somebody like Craig and Rob on those panels, because they would have just shut the can off at, you know, above 3 miles an hour, and then the data goes away. That's critical that we keep that stuff in there. And without those guys saying something like, hey, you got to do it, then it just goes away. Nobody knows why.
I think NASTIF's an underappreciated organization.
Yeah.
Oh, they are doing so much good work for us and have been for years. And Rob and Craig's participation, but also now that Donnie Cipher is chairing that, is just it's a trifecta. It's got a really great group of people that are paying attention to things that should be paid attention to now. And my understanding is that professionalism and engagement has built us a lot of respect among the engineering OE side of the table, and that it really is a collaboration at this point. And they really see us, you know, their brand advocates out on the road, which is, you know, another discussion about the future of dealerships. But what they've been able to accomplish is really fantastic. And the message that we had, it can be very confusing. You know, how do you submit a service information request? How do you deal with, you know, the matrix of tools and the matrix of service information? How do you get what you need? But again, it's the same process of demystifying, getting the answers, getting used to it. And then once you dig in, you're like, okay, great, I got this.
We have a seat at the table. And what's really nice is that the OEs are part of NASTIF. And they're all at that table together. And that's a good thing. In fact, at APEX this year, I'm going to do lead a panel on, careers and technician careers, where we're going with that. And Donnie and Chris Chesney, Kyle Holt, and Jill Saunders from Toyota will be on with me. Thank you so much for being here. A final question for you all. What's next when it comes to the connected car and ADAS for the top shop operator? Anything that he or she should be doing?
I think paying attention to the information specifically this committee is bringing forward, but also the other associations that we are involved with and connected with to stay ahead of this curve. Really, right now, it's really about learning and being ready. And you know, when these cars start hitting the market, that we're prepared. It's still kind of new in the process to say, you know, take this class, buy this piece of equipment, right? It's still coming. But when that training does show up, you know, for me, it's like the, you know, when Priuses were first coming out, everybody was thinking these things are horrible. Carolyn is the probably the world's foremost expert in Prius repair, but you know, we were taking classes as soon as they came out, and we're ready to go. You know, when I got the call, I have a Prius. Yeah, sure. Or you know, another shop called. So when this happens with connected cars or with autonomous cars, we'll be ready. So that's I think that's the secret, is be prepared, right? Adapt or become obsolete.
The takeaways as we got through the final piece of the connected car event was a panel with the committee. And most of the questions that were coming out of the audience were, you know, more specifics on training, more specifics on tools, more specifics on the, you know, different J efforts that are going through SAE. So it was, you know, basically more information, please. That was really a tremendous signal, right? That people aren't like, oh no, they're engaging, they're moving forward through the process. You know, we're not going to know how to fix new technology if all we're doing is, you know, staying in our own little environments in our own shops. It's so easy to get isolated and behind the curve. And so the best thing you can possibly do is get involved with your organizations and use those resources to stay in touch and learn from others and make sure that people are advocating on your behalf. Certainly listening to this podcast is a part of that too, a way to get connected even if you can't travel. But certainly supporting your local organizations, ASCCA is one of them, but get engaged, get involved.
Great organization out there. Please, everyone, please listen for a podcast we're doing with the ASCCA Automotive Technology Degree Program that's coming out. In fact, it'll be coming, it'll already have come out by the time you hear this. And you guys are doing some great things out there. Nico, any final words?
Dave and Carolyn just summed it up very well. I would say from Dave, be prepared, and Carolyn, get involved. Be prepared and get involved. Period. End of story. That's what you have to do right now. There's nothing, you can't go buy a bunch of tools right now and all that. So now that we're not even recommending that. Just be ready and start reading.
So put your life preserver on, dive into the deep end of the pool, and tread it, baby, and absorb it and get wet.
Yeah, right. There you go.
Be involved. Thank you so much, Carolyn Kokolet, Dave Kusa, and Nico Sugias. Appreciate you being here.
Carm, you rock.
Thanks a lot, Carm.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks, take care. Carm.
Thank you to ASCCA's Carolyn Kokolet, Dave Kusa, and Nico Sugias to help shed some light where there was shade and helping the industry understand the autonomous car trends. This was a great episode to help you keep ahead of the curve. The key talking points can be found at remarkableresults.biz/E366 and links to my guests' previous episodes. Hey, please don't forget to check out the new books page on the website, and don't forget to write me. I love to hear from you. carm@remarkableresults.biz. We'll talk soon.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.